Hey Zach, how you doing?
Doing well, how are you doing?
I'm good. You're in a new location.
Put in probably too many hours this week and I decided to sit in a chair. Sit in a chair in the living room.
That's good.
Yeah.
You're normally working from home?
Oh yeah. Well, since the pandemic,
Okay, got it.
we go to the office or we have these different retreats, but like this Is it this week? No, next week I was supposed to be traveling for these meetings and stuff, but those got canceled as well now with the new spike. So, for the most part, yeah.
All right. Where do you live again?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. That's right. What part of Wisconsin?
The Green Bay Appleton area, if you're
Oh,
familiar with
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I grew up in Minnesota,
Right.
Minneapolis. So I have familiarity
Yeah.
with Green Bay. My
Just
hatred.
so
My
you're in a
hatred.
different spot too, right? You got a new painting in the background.
Just a painting that got traded out. My fiance is just playing with backgrounds, so there'll be a new one in another couple of weeks.
Are you taking feedback and like seeing if
Yeah,
people
no, not
notice?
yet. Not yet. I don't
Yeah.
notice it. I'm busy focused here, so other people see it. I don't really notice it. Yeah, so same location, different painting. She's also a painter, so there'll probably be one of her paintings
Oh,
up
cool.
there.
Are they hers or?
This one isn't the one before was, and then
Oh.
there'll be another one she wants to. In fact, this is the canvas right here that she's getting ready to work.
Yeah.
So, it's all
Do
part of the
you get to
fun.
pick?
I'm sure she would be glad to let me pick, but I'm just grateful to have somebody wanting to beautify my space. So
Yeah.
I am on the we haven't talked about the Enneagram at all, but on the Enneagram, I'm what we call very low self-preserving subtype. And what that translates to is that I could easily live and have lived in an apartment with an inflatable mattress on the floor and one chair for about 8 to 9 months and not notice that, like, I don't have a home. So
Yeah.
having a partner who cares about a home is really just delightful.
That's funny. Yeah.
And I appreciate it, but I get very focused on the things that I care about and not my surroundings. So it's an area of development for me. I have to learn to like care about surroundings. So.
I care about it and I notice about it, but I am also very self-preserving. We talked about me being reserved, and I think it just goes back to growing up really poor and stuff, but like, I'm older, wiser, have enough money where I don't really need to work, but at the same time, I live off, 7 cent ramen noodles. And yeah, it's like
Right. Yes,
I'm not
yes.
against going out and having $1,000 on a meal, but at home, that's my behavior. So
That's funny. Yeah, it's just sort of funny how people are humans. We're all different. Good. Well, what's going on? What's the latest? It sounds like you've been working really hard. I know the kind of the last thing we talked about, you were getting lots of positive feedback and lots of empowerment and authority to begin to do whatever it is you want to do. How's that going? What's the latest?
Well, yes, I received all the green lights, and then other people stuck their fingers in the pie, as you could imagine, would try to happen. I would say that I guess it's best kind of described as this is I put together a proposal which was reasonable based off of the value for the company. I made it aware in the proposal that I think it's the best value for the company and it's not about me and I don't really care. Somebody else can run this thing. As a matter of fact, put me down as TBD because that might be the case anyways. Didn't say that to him directly, but
Right.
they could pick up what I was laying down. And at the end of the day, I watched people just fight for their silos again, even if it was against organizational vision. And I had all the pre-connections. I had all the alignment meetings. Like each individual leader I talked to for several hours in private meetings up to it. But come the day, eventually we had one meeting where the chief sat us down and he said, look, he told me in private before the meeting, he goes, I'm going to have all these different leaders in this meeting, and either they figure out how to order off the menu and we can sit down and have dinner, or at the end of the day, I'm going to tell everybody that they get spaghetti because I'm Italian and I like spaghetti, but they need to buy into this decision and try to do it first. So we had a 4.5 hour meeting and there was no outcomes. And I stepped out of that meeting and I went into a postmortem on it. And as soon as I entered the Zoom, there was like people pointing fingers at me on the Zoom and yelling at me, I know what you're going to say. And I didn't have to say anything. It was really obvious. It's like, we went to that meeting and there was no outcomes. No one moved towards even shaping agreements or rethinking things or opening up a healthy dialogue of questions. Like, I know we're doing this now, but I'm not sure if this is how we should do it in the future. This is not working. Or we do this way because this, but I'm not sure, you know, and trying to let other people buy in. Everything was a constant salesman pitch of the consistent value. And if we break this down, it's going to be a catastrophe. And I was the only person who really spoke up in the meeting partway through. And I said, look, I already talked to the different leaders. Like, here's one that I think we could move. And we went through some of the pieces, and the different leaders were just like, you know, screw that guy as soon as I mentioned it, because they were already in struggle mode and kind of left me sit there. Well, as soon as we got to the end of the meeting, the chief said, and the only takeaway of the meeting was, Zach, set up a private one-on-one with my executive assistant for me and you. I'd like to go through the organizational changes that you've discussed so that way we can make you more efficient. That was the only takeaway. So I enter into this post-mortem meeting and these people are screaming at me and all upset, fighting to keep their armies banded together. And I was like, you know what? I did a prep meeting with you guys for 2.5 hours before this. I told you the words to say and to stay away from. Halfway through the call, one of my previous bosses was told, quote unquote, not because the chief is a bad guy or anything like that, but this guy wouldn't stop selling, right? He's like, you need to shut up. If you talk one more time before anybody else in your business area or your relative business area speaks at least twice, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the meeting. Like, you need to shut up. Everybody needs to contribute to this, right? And so since it's a 4.5 hour meeting, we ended up taking some breaks. When I was in the break, I messaged a couple of the people in there and I said, look, we don't have to form any agreements in this meeting, but we damn sure better move to shaping some agreements and opening up some more healthy dialogue. And that just didn't happen. And so when I entered that postmortem meeting, I was just, you know, they knew I was already having back channel conversations, as I expect that they're all having as well. But when I moved into that postmortem, I just looked at them all and I was like, I hope you guys like spaghetti. Like, this guy is known, like, he gave you your chances. He's been dealing with this for a couple of months now. He's gonna go order spaghetti for you. So I ordered lasagna. I'm not against Italian foods, but or at least I got some meatballs in my spaghetti because I can't handle it. I needed a little bit something different than what I keep on getting fed. And then it got quiet. And then some of the people within that team kind of, they didn't mutinize, but they did come to my aid on quite a few things. And that was never my intent. But we're not organizing in the right way to get shit done. Mm-hmm. And it's so demotivating that at times it makes me stop and check myself to say, have my motives changed, and am I fighting the right fight on this? And so, like, that's why I said, look, if that's the case, then it just needs to be the best decision then for the company and put my name TBD on the chart and have it report to somebody else. And I don't care, but here's a charter and here's what I believe that we need to do to solve these organizational issues. To post that, we've been able to work a few things out, but there's a constant fudging and nail biting across specifically several VPs where they are still trying to say, well, you know, if you get these people, then there have to be via dotted line, you know, and some other political mess. And they blame it on HR, they blame it on something else. But the reality is there's never really a consistent reason, and there's always an example where that's not the case. And so it's when you get to the heart of the matter, it's like if you start moving around some of these people's organization, it really exposes them for what they do and how they drive value, and or they're worried about this chief on top. And if I move some of these parts and the chief agrees with me, it gives the chief a little bit of a blueprint on how to take apart the rest of it. And so finally, I got down to the right conversations with the right people, and they're just like, Zach, if you take this, you know, 60 other people over here, well, half of them are going to leave because they're not going to like the way that this is going to get sorted out. And so we're having a better conversation that's more real, but not solvable for the problem that I set out to solve. It's like that's a different problem, right? And that's not the problem that I need to care about. I care about it, but it's not the problem I need to care about. But I do care about the individual who has that problem because they've helped promote my career and build my career and all this other jazz, right? So that leaves me in these weird positions then where it's like, I don't want to beg, borrow, pluck, or steal and hurt anybody. But at the same time, if I drag out the decision-making process when I know what the evidential outcomes are, or if I half-ass it, I'm setting myself up for failure on my objectives, and I'm slowing down corporate velocity on critical initiatives, or whoever does this, right? And so I kind of just is like, well, we can negotiate away a couple of these line items. And that's fine, and I think that it makes sense that we do that to help get some mutual benefit on, you know, all the different party sides, and try to find the individual's interests who's impacted. And we've done that, and there's still fudgeting. And so I'm at a point with it where, well, I don't know. Yeah, obviously I'm not going to be able to keep all the relationships intact. And that's what's probably going to hurt me the most in the next steps, is I will still need these relationships intact even after these changes, because the value that's provided from these other business units are important in the end-to-end market functions. And so the point here isn't to spoil a relationship or to do this through brute force. Like it has to be strategically done, and they have to agree to it, or later on I'm going to have more operational issues. So I'm just spending a lot of time trying to think of a minimal viable way to impact them so we can phase it in over time and consistently adjust culture in a way that's, well, adjusting culture is usually a longer pole in the tent.
Yeah,
So
sure.
even if the individuals are ready, like logistically, I think we just need to move slower. Because if we rip out some appendage over here and change it, other parts of the organization will suffer, because if I rip out appendage A, appendage B, C, and D will fall apart really quick.
Yeah.
Or the chief will get a blueprint on how to take them apart, and that will actually hurt the organization, even if appendage A was ready to go. It's like, okay, well then keep your gallbladder for a little bit, even if it's not doing anything meaningful, but you know. And then the other side of it is like, I'm also facing this mindset where, as if you're working with a lot of doctors, the doctors think only the doctors can run the hospital through the specialist interests. And that's the way engineers think about software companies. However, in almost all cases, engineers are not running the software company. In almost all cases, hospitals are not actually run by the doctors, but they're key to the advisors through boards or what have you.
So a big part of research has been done around stages of consciousness in organizations, and it's 40 years of research that has identified three major stages of consciousness. And the one is called skill-centric consciousness. Doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, people who have mastery of a craft, but don't have responsibility for systems, humans, management, complexity. And the skill-centric is the earliest stage of consciousness and development in white-collar professional. I mean, we're talking in like white-collar corporate world. There's lots that go before that. But by the time you've achieved that, what's unique about all of them is the skill-centric stage of consciousness is very elitist, very perfectionist, very suspicious and careful about who they're going to consider credible. They believe they have reached the top and that there is a way to optimize to the point of perfection because their craft allows for that. Their craft allows for them to keep noodling over that one thing, the bits and bytes, the dollars, whatever it is.
Without a doubt, that's what I'm dealing with on several levels right now.
Okay, so then the next stage of consciousness is self-determining. This is the group of people that go, they graduate from that when the doctor is hired to run the other doctors. And they go, what the heck? Like, I can't seem to perfect this. I can't seem to get. So they start getting interested in like personality systems and systems theory and models and approaches to organizations. And they're like, oh, okay, like not everything goes up and to the right. But they still believe that everything can go up and to the right as long as you have just enough information. Just keep collecting information, keep having conversations, and eventually everything will get optimized up and to the right. Self-determining people are more adaptable than self-skill-centric, but they're very, very likely to burn out because they still believe that there is a way to figure it out. And so they've graduated one, but they're still stuck in this kind of like, okay, I just have to keep going, working harder, more hours, more everything. And so the biggest challenge that the self-determining people face is burnout. They just lose contact with balance. The stage after that is called self-questioning. And then the stage after that, which is self-actualizing, and it's not Maslow's. And so
some sort of maturity cycle, right?
Yeah. So it is a kind of, I do it horizontally. So it's an ever expanding spiral of complexity. So each stage gets more complexity. Self-questioning is a quantum leap. So if these two, skill-centric, self-determining, are effectively what we call first-tier consciousness, there is a quantum leap when you get to self-questioning and self-actualizing. That quantum leap is second-tier consciousness. And that leap is when you start to question and you start to see that there are stages before and stages after. It's the first time you realize, like, oh, wait, I'm in a developmental pattern and I'm just one step along the way of that developmental pattern. And I see the limits and the needs and the gifts of prior stages of development. And I see the language patterns are different in each of these. So perfecting and optimizing is the language, the objectives of skill-centric people. And self-determining is expansion and growth, etc. So when you get to self-questioning, it's the first time you say, hold on a minute. It's possible that not everything on the growth curve can go up and to the right, up and to the left, you know, or yeah, up and to the right. It's possible that sometimes we're going to have to shrink in order to grow later. It's possible that we need to slow down in order to speed up. It's possible that, and they start questioning all these things. And with each of these successive stages of consciousness, their timeline for what they see elongates. So skill-centric is, they're looking at 3 to 6 months. That's all they care about. They're only looking at 3 to 6 months. Self-determining is looking 6 months to a year, maybe 2 to 3 years. Once you get to self-questioning and self-actualizing, you're looking at 5, 10-year timelines. You're going, I'm seeing out 5 years, and none of these other people are. And so a lot of the work that you're stuck in is, and just to be really clear, it takes about 5 years for somebody to make it to the next stage of consciousness. So the goal is not to get people there because life conditions are what demand it. So if you're an engineer and you've never had to manage other engineers, you're going to stay at skill-centric. You're going to live and die there because your life conditions don't demand anything new of you. Your worldview is stuck. If you start getting hired to be a manager, you either have to evolve to self-determining or you fail. You won't be able to succeed. And so for you, as you have made your way through the organization, you have ascended to different levels of consciousness, but now you're having to negotiate with people that think they're better than you, that think they're bigger and smarter than you, and they don't understand the way that you work, and they aren't right. And so so there's actually a whole body of knowledge around how to have those conversations. And if you want, I'm happy to unpack this stuff in a little more detail for you, maybe on another call, or we can actually do it on this call. I can probably call up a presentation, just show you how it works. But those are some containers that might be useful for you. It's a developmental approach, because you're managing a different set of trade-offs and polarities at higher levels than they are. And you have to be able to link their trade-offs and polarities to the ones you're managing, which are going to be greater complexity. So I'll just pause there and see if any of this feels like it's interesting enough to keep going, or deeper, or if you want to talk about something else.
No, it's spot on. I wouldn't, and some benchmarking is tough. We say something like that, or we have that discussion, and the first thing I think a person is wondering where they fit, right, in the maturity cycle, if they haven't studied it yet. I know I'm not skill centric, but I don't know if I'm much past that at this point.
Your center of gravity, based on working with you, your center of gravity is self-determining. You're peeking over the fence to self-questioning. You have quite a lot of openness to it, but you're not rewarded yet for it. You're still kind of rewarded internally for self-determining. Self-determining people are the hallmark of a self-determining stage of consciousness is they just work way too many hours. Just way too many hours. And I would say pretty much every time you and I have talked, you're like, yep, I am totally spent. I'm like, I've worked too many hours. And that's really normal. I think, by the way, it's useful, but there you can access later stages and draw resources from them, even if it's not your natural center of gravity. It is very possible. And so, you know, if you want, what I'd like to do, since we're here, let me just present some of this stuff to get you starting to think about who you are and what resources you have. And then I can dig deeper with you to start working through how you might frame new conversations, how you might think about drawing resources from later stages of development that may not be where you live every day, but they're not hard to access. They're actually very easy for us to access intellectually. When we talk about your center of gravity, we talk about how you naturally react without thinking. Your unconscious reaction is, at skill centric, I need to perfect everything. I need to do it right. And I am right. And I'm defensive of being right. And I don't trust you until I see your credentials. That's just your default reaction if you're skill centric. The default reaction of self-determining is, if I just put in enough hours, effort, energy, accumulate enough knowledge, I will get there. I'll be able to be what I need to be. That's your default. So anyway, that's just showing you like some of that. So I'm going to do a screen share here and try to present this. This is a presentation I haven't done in a long time. So forgive me if I'm rusty on it, but let me just see here. You can see that, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's see if this is even built accurately. I don't even know if I did this right. Where is it? Start over here. Where is it? So, hold on just a second here. Wow, this thing got all messed up. Okay, so the bottom line is this. The first thing just to know about this stuff is that
it's like a capability maturity model, but
yeah, it's you have containers, right? So when I'm at skill centric, I have a particular container. It's a glass. And as I grow and develop, I'm just adding more content, but I'm not fundamentally changing the container. Then when I go to like the next stage, I get a bigger container. So now I'm like, wow, I'm a much bigger container. I can hold more, so you can put a lot more water in. Well, what happens between first tier and second tier is everything changes. The container is completely different. So now you're like a spider web, which can hold water and can contain water, but not at all for the same reason. And in fact, the web itself is for a totally different function. And so you can understand why people who live at the prior tier can understand each other. Like, oh, you're a bigger glass of water. You're a pitcher. I'm a glass. I get it. We're both doing the same thing. You're just bigger than I am. Once you get to a web, you're like, what? What are you even? Who are you? What are you even doing? I don't get this. And so it's possible that the changes that you're talking about and the ways that you're conceiving of this new organization live more like on this web. You're like, it's got to be this and this and this. And they're like, what are you doing? You're a crazy person. And so that's one possibility. Now, I don't know if this presentation will work. We just make a distinction here between expansion and transformation as two different kinds of growth. Expansion is change within a particular meme, and transformation is when you graduate to a new meme. So these are all the ones that researchers over 40 years, Harvard psychologists, who I studied under to learn this, they've discovered. So I won't go through all these in great detail. I just want to focus. The earliest one is impulsive. Then you have self-centric, which is getting and defending. Then you have group-centric, conforming and belonging. Then you have skill-centric, which is what you're now going to experience. So when I give this is an actual inventory I give. The vast majority of people that I work with live somewhere between skill-centric and self-determining. So this is now achieving and analyzing. Most people think when they get to self-determining, they're at the absolute top. But there are discernible stages beyond this. That research has shown: self-questioning, relativizing and contextualizing, self-actualizing, integrating and transforming. Then you have construct aware, which is questioning the constructs, ego. And then the last one is unitive, which is all embracing, witnessing. And these are more like yogis and monks and people that spend 20 years meditating in caves who have a kind of consciousness that the rest of us don't.
Sure.
And so anyway, What you're playing with here is your graduation from this to this. And in some cases, self-actualizing. The titles are less important than the function.
Right. And when you're in a maturity level of some sort, you're blended across many, but you largely fit in one bucket.
Yeah. And the reality is you can't skip any of these.
Right.
So, for example, for me to be at anything beyond self-determining, I have to have already experienced and lived through and stabilized some of that self-determining.
Evolve, can't leapfrog.
Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit. Like sometimes you can have like because of the virtue of the role that I had as a pastor of a very large, complex church, it demanded self-questioning and a little bit of self-actualizing. Like I just couldn't survive if I didn't develop some of that. Right. But I also noticed that I kind of did skip self-determining, like because I didn't live in a corporate system and manage corporate, you know, processes for a period of time, I really had to go back and reintegrate this for.
Oh, sure. When you started building out your own business model and stuff.
Yeah. Right. I had to go back and be like, oh, okay. And then manage. And I was the chief leadership officer for a real estate development company. And I had to learn all these things. And I was like, what's the point of that? It's like, oh, that model really helped. Okay, got it. So there are some things you can kind of skip through too quick. You don't ever skip it fully, but you may have to reintegrate some things. So in any case, I think that may be the end of the presentation. I can't remember if there's more. Let me see. Yeah, that's it. That's all there is to it. Anyway, I just wanted you to see kind of the map of what
is lives. The name of that wheel?
That this whole system is called the Leadership Maturity Framework. And there's a lot more stuff that I can share with you about this.
Is that something that you've assembled or is that a common framework?
No, it's not my framework. It's Susan Greuter Cook is the originator of it. And then I was trained in this by her. So I went and trained with her over a number of days and then I had to be supervised and then I had to give a bunch of debriefs to figure out whether or not, you know, and honestly, I don't use it very often because of the level of complexity that it depicts, you know, lots and lots of people just live at skill-centering, self-determining. And I just know how to manage that. I did it because I had a small number of clients who were really functioning at kind of construct aware, very, very late stage, very rare 1%. And I was enjoying it, but I wanted to know like what the tools that they need are different than the tools that a self-determining person needs. That's why I took on that course of study. And so anyway, my point in saying all this is it's helpful for you right now to start to identify, based on the language that people are using, what is it that they are focused on and frightened of? And don't judge it, just get curious about it, because it reflects both their stage of leadership maturity and what they're rewarded for. Right. So once you understand that, you'll have to start speaking to that, because right now you're speaking a language that is bigger than they're capable of understanding and hearing. What you're speaking about is what's best for an organization that is a vast, complex system with a deep history and a long future. They're like, that's Chinese. That's why they can't get their head around what's best for the organization, because they can't see that. They can only see the world that they're rewarded for living in. So, I mean, let's just play with that. Let's hypothesize together.
Yeah. So I did that for a while when I was in consulting, in the sense of listening deeply to what they were saying, trying to figure out what the reward system was, and actually pre-studying the people and profiling the people in the room to figure out what their reward systems were. So that way, when I was in the room for potential sales, we would be able to hit on those topics for big ticket sales. And I really enjoyed that, especially when you'd hit it and you'd hit it well. And there's something rewarding about it when you feel like you don't want to say manipulated the behavior. There's a behavioral psychology component to it, but when you've helped them understand how it aligns. One of the people right now that I am really bumping heads with, and I don't want to, this person is very good at their work. I would say they are very similar to me in many, many characteristics. Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of admiration for them. Looking at the wheel and what you've just discussed, I feel like, because they're an engineering counterpart, a lot of the stuff that they think through is linear thinking, or I'm crystallized thinking, and they're very much skill centric. However, he's evolved to a point where I don't know where he is past that, if it's self-deterministic or it's at the next one, questioning. But he still leans back into the skill sets a lot, given the nature of the company and everybody needs to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Right. And I get caught in between the forms of the levels of consciousness when I'm dealing with him, because one second it's constantly like, we need this roadmap with these linear milestones and this breakdown. And it's like, great. And then it's what's arguable about what questions we should be answering, because that was a complete waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's been a lot of energy on my side. And then the person doesn't communicate really well on top of it.
Yep.
Which I think at this time they feel like they're communicating well by saying the fewest words, the least frequent, and trying to be accurate, which it seems to be like a skill set trait, and then being open to having dialogue. Yeah. So it's like, with the way that you've laid that out, I mean, it's one of the biggest challenges over the last week has been like stuck between not having people, obviously no one's in a perfect bucket, but interfacing with people that are maybe across one or two or three of those buckets at once. And they're jumping between that with every other sentence.
Yeah, that's maybe how it comes across. My suspicion is they're actually living primarily from one center. And here's the deal. Under anxiety, we tend to go to the lower level of where our center of gravity is. So you're dealing with people at a high anxiety because you're threatening something that exists. You're promoting change management, which, as you know, produces pain. Mm-hmm. You are on the eve of taking away their agency, which is probably the thing that creates the most resistance to change. And they can see that. And the only way that I know to de-escalate defensiveness and
Well,
defend it.
in this situation, Shane, I'm actually giving this person like a ton of people. I'm actually growing their team, which is why it's like I respect this person. They're not worried about building out a hierarchy. They're worried about building value, and I very much align with their thinking. And so this is because this is a different individual from other ones I've mentioned. And that's why I said like I don't want to fight with this person. I very much agree with them. I'm actually trying to give them more people so we can interface more directly and evenly with each other. And what I'm finding is that, you know, when we're talking, like he's across those spectrums. So I don't know if that makes a difference.
It does make a difference for sure. So unpack a little bit more what's going on with him.
So because when he's going back and forth like that, because I do feel that when he goes back into his more basic nature, which is the skill set, I feel like when that happens, I haven't met his expectations. And now he's frustrated and churning with me. And so as an example in this case, like one of the pieces of advisements I was given from the chief was, this person is your engineering counterpart. And if this is going to be your value stream, align with what he needs for what he has to achieve this value stream. So you drop the order, you get everything done, whatever. Like I'll do that. Person has buckets A, B, and C. And there's another person right next to him has buckets D and F. I'm over on the other side and I've got buckets D and F, and he's asking me to connect to A, B, and C. Right. And okay, so this person's like, oh yeah, for sure, you need A, B, and C. He gets it too, right? This guy's like, yeah, you need it. This makes sense. Then we'll really be able to drive this value. However, when I take on A and B on my side, he doesn't realize, but we've had these conversations. It's like, you also need to take on F and G, and I need to take on F and G just based off of how this works. And then he goes, no, I'm not going to ask for anything unless we have this full, you know, workspace set out with the charter and the initiative and work breakdown over the next 5 years, and I can get this all back. I'm like, buddy, this is a huge waste of energy. I can go have a conversation with the chief tomorrow, and we'll make the moves. Like, we have the blank check right now, and I'm not saying cash all of it today. I'm saying let's do the one part where we're asked to do align on our value. But when I'm having a conversation with him, he's saying, we're not aligned on the value because I don't. He's like, I don't believe that we're solving the same questions that we need to do. And then we end up going in a vicious circle. My view on the organizational outcomes is like basically three types of problems we need to solve: our business problems, our customers' business problems, and then there's some technology problems. His view is we need to solve the technology problems, and that will fix our customer problems, and that will fix our business problems. And it's a much hairier ball of mess than that he likes to, not he particularly, but his entire organizational area likes to kick a blind eye to.
And that's the engineering
That's the
organization.
engineering downside and mindset, and that's
Yeah.
okay. But that's also why they don't drive vision, right? And they get the bill of the vision, and then they fill it and they tell us what's possible and what's not. And
Yep.
so it's a lot of kicking dirt at each other right now. Two pitchers on the mound, just like, you know, are we going to do this or not? And I already have it worked out organizationally where we get the structure. And this guy still wants to argue about some of the vision details before he would ask. It's like, the reality is like, we already figured it out. And you're going to get these people, and it's going to work, and it's in your benefit. And that's where I feel like his consciousness is like way over here. It's amazing. Then all of a sudden it's like, right down here, like ready to tell you that you missed all the steps along the way from the skill perspective. And it's like, I'm just trying to organize first because I already know the outcome. I have the crystallized thinking approach where it's like, I see the outcome, and I don't need that linear piece there. Like, we'll get that tomorrow and the next day. We at this level, like, we know these pieces. And that's been a huge frustration on my part to do that. I don't know if you have advisement in that area.
I mean, without knowing a little more detail, so I'm going to just test a few things with you.
Okay.
So a few things to just keep playing with is, I think, keep playing with polarities, like in your own mind. Like, is there a
Sure.
polarity at work here that would
Definitely, for
change
sure.
the conversation? And you literally talk about the infinity loop with him. Like, this is the nonlinear reality that we're dealing with. And most people, when you point out a polarity, they accept it pretty quick.
Yeah, he
And
and
if
he
it's a real
will.
polarity, they're like, okay, got it. That's a polarity. And you go, look, you and I are just managing two halves of a polarity. And there isn't a right and wrong, but there is a period of time, is a period of time where one of those poles is going to be out of balance on purpose. And then there are warning signs, there are red flags for when you're out of balance. And I actually have that in module five. There are videos on how to actually do polarity management in a group context. So that's one thing to just play with. The other thing to play with is, I get, because I'm like you, a crystallized thinker. I get that kind of, I already know the answer. I've got the crystal ball and I understand how it networks. And it's sometimes helpful, especially for engineering types, to create something linear, even if it isn't, to find an angle or a vantage point by which you can put a lens on it that does linearize it a little bit. And then link that for him so that he sees the line. So I mean, literally, I have another client who has a VP of engineering, very experienced VP of engineering, and a visionary CEO. And the VP of engineering, the visionary is like, I need this and this, and I've got that, and this is going to work there, and this is going to, it's a robotics company. And this VP of engineering is like, I want the strategy, and then I want the structure, and then I want the product strategy, and I want the product roadmap, and then I want to do engineering. And I need all of those in that order. And he's not wrong. But it is a very kind of, I need all these things in line, and that's in a startup company, which is, you could do some of that and you need to do some of it, but there's also just a point where you're like, we're in startup mode.
Your startup mode,
So,
you're building the plane as you fly it.
yeah, right. And whereas you guys aren't really building the plane while you fly, though you kind of are. And so he's probably used to a little bit of that linearization that you feel
Well,
like might be a waste of time, but if there is a way to create some linearity for him.
yeah, and I can do that. We
If you
are a
can do
bit startup
that.
mode on this in the sense that we've made so many market commitments that are coming due that we haven't figured out how to solve, which is not a bad thing. It's not that we haven't figured out stuff. We haven't figured out how to solve in the value adding way that we intended to. And so there could be market disappointment in the first pass. And so right now he's in a cycle of buying time to figure it out differently versus try. So there's like we are in a time crunch as well up front.
So those would be the two things based on abstraction, without actually getting deeper into what you're talking about, which I'm sure I would have more to say. If you want to go another layer deeper in detail, we can do that. But that's the overall impression that I have is he sounds like he has the capacity to think in polarities. It sounds like you guys are dealing with polarities, complex ones, organizational, systemic polarities. You've got a sequencing in his mind, which is, technology first solves these other, it's the dominoes. And so you might just have to keep working with him over a series of conversations, and metaphors can be helpful. So to help him understand, like, we're not dealing with dominoes. We're dealing with a web, for example. You could say that this links to here, this links to here, this links to here. And so that's what we're actually dealing with. Or, I'm thinking off the top of my head. So I'm trying to think of what other metaphors might work where you have three overlapping informing things.
I like that. It's not dominoes where we can tick tick A, B, C, and D right in a row. It's a web.
So you want to honor
You
some of
can't
the
solve one of these
linearity he
problems
needs.
without neglecting the other one, or it makes more problems.
And so I think just thinking through, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like, how would I, what metaphor might help him get a handle? When you have effectively three legs of a stool, that might be the metaphor. You don't want to be too obtuse with these metaphors. They need to be somewhat businessy, right? Which are easy to grasp. So, three legs of a stool is often a good one. Like, I know you might be thinking and seeing this as dominoes. I'm seeing this as three legs of the stool. And if we can't do all three at once, we've got a peg and it's going to fall on itself. And so, I need your help installing and thinking through. And I know that's not your area of accountability, and I know it may not be your area of interest, but it is something that is required for what we're looking at together. And
Yeah, I'm sure
so,
buying in the process I could definitely do versus checkpoints at the end with him. He's, you know, it puts him in a review seat or a different authority level as well, which I don't always enjoy. As a, it's like, you know, you don't, you're not approving the vision, right? It's like you're building the vision, and you right now you're questioning whether or not we've done the right market analysis when you're saying, do I agree with the questions we're solving? It's like, well, if you trust me, and I don't want it to be a vote of trusting, it's like, you should assume that we've done all the right analysis if we're solving the right questions. How we solve those questions is completely up to you. Like, you tell me if I'm blowing smoke, but as an engineering counterpart, like, you go figure out how to build the plane. I'm telling you, we need a plane. It needs to have wings, and it needs to be able to fly from, I don't know, Wisconsin to Nevada, right? Like,
so in that in that case, a part of what you're doing is a certain degree of education, where you're having to decide how much time, you know, trust, not trust, less important to me than function. Are we functioning or not? So what you've done is a whole lot of background work, and all you've developed a whole body of knowledge around and beliefs around the strategy, the business strategy, and how to solve the business problems and how to solve customer problems and all that fun stuff. And you've got to be able to say to him, let me debrief you a little bit on what we've already done. Let me show you the answer that we've already gotten. And let me tell you just a little bit about how we got those answers, so that he knows those are not really up for discussion. So just anchoring him in education and going, look, here's what's happening. Here's what's happening. I want to talk about the three-legged stool for just a minute. I want to talk about why these two legs are already solved in a way. And that leaves this third leg, which is really your leg. That's the area that we need solved. That can also be helpful. So you just say, look, I think you've decided to see this, or maybe by virtue of your vantage point, that this is a domino situation. It starts with this one leg and everything will follow. Here's why that isn't real. And this is by virtue of my vantage point. So I have a different vantage point than you, and I'm going to give you some of the context. It sounds like he's, like a lot of engineers, there is a kind of like, tell me all the ways that this, you know, follows the way back to the top of the mountain where the water starts to melt to create the little stream that makes the river that goes into the tributary that flows into the ocean. You know, and you're like, look, man, you're at the beach. Just figure out how the river connects to the ocean. That's all we need. And he's asking questions about where this trickle starts. And it's possible that you need to just say, look, trickle started here. We did this. We got that. That's settled. So those are some other ways to, another metaphor to start working with.
Okay.
How does this sound?
Yeah, it sounds good. Part of it's on me. I haven't given this the right focus either. So it's, a lot, 50% or more of it's on me and my approach to it. The person definitely has the right capacity. And so I don't think it's the other person. And then there's also, I think, some pent-up frustration on their side, because they've been expecting, you know, the orders of what to do for a while. And we had to make changes to get to where we are to even have the discussions that we're having today. So there's just pent-up frustration, I think, on both sides, which he manages really well. You know, he's not beating his fist on the table. That's why I said, like, I respect this individual given the situations that we're in, and what he's being held accountable for. He's the right person. He has the right ability to take it forward. So it's,
and that, by the way, is another way to have this conversation. So I'm just giving you several to choose from. Kind of have a menu. You might use all of them, some of them, but another way to have conversations like this are, let's just start with what we're accountable for. What are you accountable for? What am I accountable for?
We're accountable for different things.
Yeah, right. So
sounds similar, but they're dramatically different. So great. As an example, in some of these recent changes, I'm accountable for product development and delivery for my area and operations.
Right? Yeah.
He's accountable for product development, the engineering aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Product execution in a sense, yeah.
And no delivery of it. He doesn't have to worry about customer culture. He only has to worry about his own organization's culture. He doesn't have to worry about a partner system of 10,000 partners with hundreds of millions of dollars of investment that he's impacting. It's like, we just built a widget, and our partners were selling that widget on our system for the last 10 years, making all their bread, right? They were doing a ton of money on that. It's like, so if we're going to sell a widget, it better be a damn good widget, because now we just pissed off our partners, and our partners are going to go work for our competitors, right? And there's these huge complex webs, and they're just like, well, no. The only thing that we need to do is just build our widget. And it's like, it's way more complex than that. If we just build that widget and move it in the market, 60% of the people doing our work on our behalf of our customers go work for our competitors because they need to make money.
So I find, generally speaking, that when you take the time, which it sounds like you guys just haven't had the time to have these conversations. One is it's a series of conversations. It's probably not
Yeah,
one.
it's yeah, it's a
And
so
two is.
we set up bi-weeklies, or I was like, we usually talk at least once a week, if not twice a week, for an hour. And that's why I said, like, we're getting it's a series of conversations to align. I agree with you on that. There's
I mean, I remember having, I was in a role in an organization, pretty high up, and there was a woman who was just masterful at scaling systems in a way that I wasn't. And I was out trying to do voice of the customer, understanding strategy, these kinds of, brand new blue sky territory. And I remember she was incredibly frustrated with me. And we had to have a conversation. At one point, the metaphor occurred to me, and it was, look, you know how they used to send pioneers in the West, like apocryphally, they would send children into the wilderness. And if they came back, it meant it was safe to go that way. And if they didn't, don't go that way, right? I said, I'm like the pioneer baby. They've sent me into the wilderness. I have no idea what plant forms these are. I don't know if there's a bear over there. I don't even know what anything about the this system. And you're asking me where the stoplight's gonna go. And like, we're nowhere near the question of stoplights. We're still at the question of, is it safe for me to even stand here? And that helped her. She suddenly was like, oh. So we had a shorthand that was quickly, she'd be like, hey, Shane, I don't know if this is like stoplight kind of comment, but where are we at with X, Y, and Z? And I'd be able to be like, no, not stoplight. That's the right question. Here's where we are. I'd be like, definitely stoplight. I'm nowhere near that. Like we're not at that. You're designing cities and city planning. We don't even know if we have a tent we're gonna put up here. And so just thinking through like what's that operating metaphor that gives you guys a shorthand and a shared understanding. And that cleared up our attention. The tension we were having vanished right after that conversation. So that's all what I'm trying to give you are a series of different kinds of approaches, one of which should be able to take hold, and you guys will get alignment and clarity.
But I like that metaphor in the sense that it's actually what I've similar to what I've used in the past is like, I'm an explorer by nature. I'll go and I'll explore the unknown unknowns and make them known unknowns. They're not perfect. It's still a fucking mess. And then I'll put the right people in the place to make the known unknowns at least somewhat, there's a map. There's no habitat, there's no houses, there's nothing. And then all the civil engineers can come in. And they can work with the people who at least can find the next location, product managers, whatever. And they can build the city, right? And so like this guy wants to come through and build the city, and he wants to build the city one street at a time. And like everything that he says is very linear and it makes sense for scalability. But it's like we also need to have the exploratory tactics in the market so that way we can try these things. And right now that it's like we can't explore, we have to do this one little thing right now. And like, well, the one little thing that you're doing right now, I know is, well, it's basically like you found the Mississippi, but you thought you hit the Pacific Ocean. Like you got a long ways to go. And by the way, over the next part of the journey, like you'll realize that all the maps that you made were wrong because you had the wrong sense of direction. Right? It's like I can orient you from here to say, this is not the right way at this point already. Like some of our major strategies need to change in the sense of like how we're handling and what we're doing with data if we're going to build a competency over time as compared to a strategic advantage. And that's where I get super frustrated because when I'm talking with these people, they're like, well, first of all, I don't think a lot of them are following what I'm saying when I say the difference between like a competency and a strategic advantage, which kind of bugs me. And then The last part is like they're so focused on the engineering effort, they're not focused on building out a strategic advantage or a competency with the investments over a period of time and how that would align.
Yeah, look, I think it's really, really normal for people not to know the distinctions that you have made. You know, this is again language. So you have a semantic range of every single word you speak. And in that semantic range, some people are going to be over here and you're going to be over here. So, you know, the word strategy is a great example of a vast semantic range. And people who are not experienced in it don't even know that. There's a body of knowledge that describes strategy as a word and a process, and there are huge bodies of knowledge around it, which I'm trained in. And most of the people I work with who are strategy people are busy doing tactics or competencies, and I'm like, those are not strategy. You haven't answered these three questions, which are the most important three to ask before you do these things. You're already way down the road over here doing this. So there's a lot of conversation about, hey, when I say this word, here's the box that I mean. Do you mean that? Do you share that understanding of that word? Or do you have a different understanding of that word? So I think if they're confusing categories, then that's the next conversation to have. Just go, there's two words that I use a lot, and I want to make sure I'm clear because it doesn't mean that you have the same understanding of those words. So when I say the phrase go to market, I mean these four things. And when I say the phrase competencies, I mean these two things. And when I say the word strategic advantage, that is over here. And so here's how these three things live together, live separately, and here's why they matter. So
Yeah.
based on that, what do you mean? What do you think when I say what are our strategic advantages and which is our competency? And so spending a little bit of time playing with semantic range and narrowing that range based on the words you're using is going to help you.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to start doing that more with them. I was trying not to do that in the past because they're coming from that skill set background, they're and being elitist in that area. They're so specific on their language, right? And they spend all of their time on a very, very specific language that, I don't want to come off as explaining something that I would expect them to know and vice versa. So I found myself in a meeting then the other day where I said something about like synthetic tests. And I said, does everybody understand what I'm saying when the synthetic test is crickets? I was like, okay. So everybody understands or no one understands?
So instead of just a flag for you, because you're probably more bright than most of the people you're talking to, and you could potentially be viewed as condescending if you're like doing a lot of teaching and explaining, you simply give yourself permission to teach and explain by making it impersonal. So for example, you would simply say, hey, I'm aware that words have a big range of meaning. And so I don't mean to sound pedantic, but for the sake of clarity, I'm going to explain exactly what I mean by this word. Right? You just tell them you're going to do it. You're like, I know that you are all really, really smart. So this is just a function of making sure that the range of meaning that I give this word, I want you all to be clear on what I'm saying when I say
Yeah.
this.
So yeah, usually I similar to that, I try to start with like sharing my inner dialogue on it, in a more empathetic way. The I like what you're saying. What bothered me though is I'm sitting with, chiefs of engineering, et cetera. And when I said that, where like no one felt confident to say like, well, what's your definition or anything like that. 'Cause I didn't phrase it in a combative way or anything like that, but no one felt confident to even try to provide, to look at accuracy. And this is a technical term, and I'm talking to only technical people on the specific topic where they're asked to come together because of their expertise on this specific technical topic. So it's like we should be all aligned on this. So I should assume that if I'm explaining this, like maybe I got some of the wrong people in the room, but like we should really, really be aligned on the like a term like this. And so I went ahead and I put all my inner dialogue and I said, well, this is actually what I'm meaning by it, just in case we're not aligned. And I put it out there. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, I wasn't thinking that at all. And I was like, we're
There
in
you go.
trouble.
No, you're not in trouble. It's normal. I'm telling you, that's super normal. I mean, I can't tell you the number of organizations that I've been in that the semantic range of words is so wide that it's appropriate that they don't hear the same thing you hear. And that's, you know, this is a function of me working across many, many organizations, many kinds of organizations, many cultures of organizations, many scales of organizations, and working with leaders who have come from places like Amazon to small, tiny companies. And what happens when you go from Target to a small company or Amazon to a small company or back and forth? Huge. It's literally gone from China to America. You're just like, what happened? But I thought we were all talking business. And so that's why it is well worth your effort, especially in a complex system that's big, to take the time, take a few minutes and say, I want to be clear about how I mean this word. I'm not saying this is the gospel truth. I'm sharing this with you so that we can have clarity in how we communicate. You might use the word another way, but this is how I'm going to be using it. And then start the dialogue from there.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, yep. And don't take it personally, and don't assume that it's a major problem if nobody understands it the same way. In fact, celebrate it when they're like, "Well, that's not at all how I understood it." Like, great, I'm so glad we had that conversation. Right. And if they go, "Yeah, that's how we get it," you're like, "Sweet, I'm really glad we verified that part of the conversation. Now let's get to work."
Okay. All right. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, you bet. You have more than I know. We got a notification that says you only have two calls, but I'm pretty sure you have a couple more, like at least one more, maybe two more after this. I don't remember though for a fact. Do you have any memory of that?
I can. I wasn't really keeping track of how many I had left, but I put out a calendar reminder for myself of how many instances I thought I would have.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, and that's already passed.
Yeah.
We canceled a few. Then we were off for like two or three.
Yeah. So I think you have a couple of more.
Yeah. No, the next couple of weeks, though, I'm in Africa. So
okay.
You wouldn't see me for 2 weeks, and maybe you see me twice more after that. And then okay. I'll let you know like how things fizzle out.
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to continue. I won't continue this time slot, but I do have the Wednesday morning group that you could continue on if you wanted to continue.
Yeah, it might be better. Yeah, that might work.
Yep. A group coaching arrangement. I can give you the pricing on that. The other option is we talk about a more private engagement. If there's appetite and a level of complexity that you want me to engage at a deeper level, I can do quite a bit more once there's a private engagement.
If you don't mind sending over the options and pricing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that would help. It's tax season and stuff too. I'm going to see how I can square up some things and that might be beneficial. So
yeah, I'll send that over to you. And like I said, it's 9 a.m. Wednesday morning Pacific time, so central for you. So 11 a.m. Wednesday morning. So I don't know. When we enrolled, you weren't able to do that. I don't know if you are now.
Right. Okay. Talk to you later.
Awesome, man. Thanks again.
You too. Bye.